Hello, hello everyone. GMGM. Welcome to Web3 Magic Podcast. Here I talk with builders of some of the most interesting projects across Web3 space. Interesting by the use case, not by the price of a token. So let's warm up with music and let's jump into today's episode. Hello everyone, so we are back, and today my lovely guest is Cynthia. And Cynthia is one of the people who is trying to revolutionize the travel industry. Was always my favorite. When I started my career, I traveled too much, so I ended up with like post-its on the, you know, tables by the bed, like which city I'm in, where am I waking up. So I slowed down a lot considerably from there, but I'm sure that, you know, once Cynthia's project takes over the world, I might become a traveler again. Cynthia, welcome.
Hey, Peter. Thanks so much for having me. I love that story, by the way. I don't know if I believe that there can be too much travel.
Right. Well, yeah, we can talk about it offline, but yeah, I can persuade you it can be. But anyway, let's start like we usually start. So tell us, how did you get to Web3? You know, where it started.
Yeah, one thing that I find interesting about people's journey into Web3 is that most people who come into Web3 have really interesting backgrounds. It's not typical like a lot of other industries where you study a specific subject and then you find a job and you follow this career path. What's beautiful about Web3 is we have so many people with lots of diverse backgrounds and perspectives that come in. And I think that's why Web3 is a pretty interesting place to work and build your career. But for me, absolutely, I think it was a bit of an accident, actually. So in 2013, I used to love attending hackathons. And the first time I heard about Bitcoin was at the Money 2020 hackathon, when somebody was building a project on Bitcoin and he wore a hot dog suit. And I had no idea why there was a connection between a hot dog suit and Bitcoin. But It was interesting. And I remember thinking, oh, I don't know what this Bitcoin thing is. It sounds like a scam. Pretty typical reaction, I think, when people hear crypto. Yeah. So fast forward to 2015, 2016, and my husband actually got really into Ethereum and learning about it because he's a developer, and he started mining. And so we had a whole bunch of mining rigs in our house because he wanted to test Ethereum. And I think that was really the first foray where I started learning about it. And then I ended up building a crypto gaming simulation that would help people learn about trading crypto. And the reason for that was in 2017, which was when we built the app, there really were no use cases for crypto, unlike now. You know, the primary use case was about trading or financial instruments. And that was how people came to crypto. So the on-ramp was, I look at different coins and I look at what I want to trade. And that was pretty much all that you could do. But the problem was that even then, we were obviously talking about adoption. And one of the biggest hurdles, and it still is, I think, today, is there's obviously a lot of scams, a lot of complexity, and a lot of tokens. And so how do you onboard somebody to make it safe for them to be able to interact and learn without them potentially losing money? So our thesis was around, how do we make it fun for people to invest and learn about the industry, but without losing any money? So they could essentially build this fake portfolio and then participate in trading competitions with real prizes and compete against other people. And then once they get comfortable, then they could actually onboard onto a real exchange and then start to build up their portfolio. And that was actually doing really well. We got to over 350,000 users, all organic, but unfortunately, Google at the time was not crypto friendly, and they ended up shutting us down, which was pretty commonplace back then for a lot of app developers that were building on either Google or the App Store. And so what ended up happening was a group of us came together who were from the travel industry, but also have a lot of experience in crypto and blockchain. And we noticed that there were a lot of issues happening in short-term rentals specifically. And we kind of came from it from two angles. So one of the angles was, you know, if you wanted to, let's say, build a travel company and have short-term rental supply, there was no single source of an API connection that would aggregate all short-term rentals. So it was actually really hard to build a business that would help you distribute short-term rentals. because Airbnb, for example, they keep everything within their own platform and they don't have any external APIs because their whole value proposition is around having unique properties that are just on Airbnb. The second position was that I've been a host for the last decade, and I also co-founded one of the largest Airbnb host forums because I've been really passionate about this space for a long time. In my business, my hosting business, I was seeing a lot of changes that weren't good. The host community, I think over the last 5 years especially, has become increasingly unhappy with how the community has been treated. So when we first started hosting in, you know, I mean, Airbnb started in 2008, but when I started in 2014, it was very community driven. So there was very much a focus on hosting, on communities, on hosts helping each other. And I very much drank the Kool-Aid from Airbnb around, you know, we love our hosts. Like, you guys are everything to us. You're the most important part of our community. Exactly. Like, it was just, and I truly do believe that they really meant it, right? Like, maybe I'm naive, but every meetup that I went to, and, you know, I even got to meet, I forget the other founder's name, but they would have these like VIP events for their super hosts and community builders. And so I actually got a chance to meet the team. And I think they genuinely really believed in this mission that they had. But I think just because of, you know, obviously they're a public company now, as they've grown, I think they've really had to focus and try and monetize and be profitable, right? Right. And what's happened is that not only for hosts, but also for travelers, the experience has really gone downhill. And so I think that's really led to an opportunity where we saw that we could actually rebuild something that felt like an Airbnb, but that was much more community driven. And if we took away this concept of, you know, public companies and shareholders, how could we actually keep the ethos of how Airbnb started, which was being really community driven, and, you know, establish ownership and give ownership back to the community, which was something that was definitely really important to me personally, having kind of gone through this journey of being a host for the last decade.
Right. Okay. So you see, I brought up the D-Travel because I assume that's what we are talking about. And I think I saw Airbnb mentioned somewhere on the website. But I didn't really connect it that it's like Airbnb killer. So you guys are basically really trying to connect the properties directly with the travelers, right?
Exactly. Yes.
And then, okay, I'm not gonna steal it from you, but I would like you to then educate me about on the role of partners and, you know, the whole ecosystem thing.
For
Where
sure.
do you want to start?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned it, but we think of ourselves really as an ecosystem. And the reason why we have taken this ecosystem approach is, you know, I don't even think that we're an Airbnb killer. I don't think that's necessarily what we're trying to do. I think that what our vision is this world where direct connections are more rewarding and more powerful, meaning that, you know, you don't have an intermediary. But I think that there's definitely, with market forces, there's always going to be people who want something like an Airbnb. And so we're not saying to people, you have to use D-Travel or you have to use Airbnb, and those are binary choices. I think there's actually a spectrum. And what we're trying to do is give people who want an option to not have an intermediary, to give them that option. Because the problem has been that if you want to have bookings as a host, most of the only options that you have are around centralized platforms, because it's how you connect right. with guests. But we're trying to give people an option that is different from that, where they still maintain all of their control and have ownership. And for us to replace something like an Airbnb, or at least give people an alternative, there's a lot of solutions that we have to solve within that. And that's why we have this ecosystem approach, because within the ecosystem, it has many pieces for that solution. So the first is having a direct booking solution. So that's infrastructure for our hosts so that they can actually book with a guest instead of through a platform. The second thing is a meta search. And that's where travelers are going to be able to come to DTravel and actually be able to connect with a host. And this is something that actually doesn't really exist in the industry today, which sounds crazy, but we don't have a meta search for it. Does, right? Yeah. We don't have a meta search for direct bookings, meaning that if you go to Airbnb, those are all centralized bookings, right? Airbnb is the platform in the middle, and there's really no way for you to connect directly with a host. The only way for you to really do that is if you happen to stumble across a website that is a host direct booking website. So kind of like if you went to the Marriott website, for example, you're booking right directly with the hotel. Same thing, if you go onto a host website and it's their website, then you're booking directly with them. But it's very, very challenging to be able to find those websites because we don't have a centralized place for that. And so that's really what we're trying to build out, which makes it really easy for any traveler to be able to say, hey, I want to go stay in Lisbon. How do I find a place that I can book directly with that guest? Because I want to have that interaction directly with them. And I want to save, you know, the 15 to 20% fees I have to pay on these platforms. And we are actually going to be launching our meta search very soon in Q1. And okay, what we're really excited about is that it's actually going to be powered by AI. What's interesting about travel is we've been talking about personalization for a really long time in travel. So the idea is that if you go to any travel website, it should be a customized experience for you. But I think until we've had AI and AI as it is today, we haven't really had the technology to be able to do that. And I think when you combine AI and Web3 specifically, there's a lot of power to that. Because with Web3 or blockchain, you have the data piece, right? Where you can say, hey, I have access to all of this data, all of this historical data, and it's pretty easy to query. But then what do you do with parsing out the huge amounts of data that exists on blockchains? It's really hard to do that. But then when you add in AI that can quickly and very intentionally figure out what data that you need and then pull that data and customize it according to whoever's using it, I think that becomes really powerful. So with the meta search, how that's going to work is if you're, say, going to Lisbon for Web Summit and you want to have a one bedroom very close to the conference, it has to have Wi-Fi, a specific work area, and you want to have a washer dryer and a certain Wi-Fi speed, then you can put that in and it becomes a travel profile for you. And then the AI will recognize what's important to you based on your past travel history and be able to recommend things that feel very specific instead of something that's more general, which is the search experience right now. You would go to Expedia or Airbnb and you kind of have to parse through the information yourself, which obviously isn't the best travel experience. But with the tool that we're building out, you essentially won't have to put any of that preference in because it will learn from your past travel history.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I have thousands of questions, but so I'll ask the most obvious one. So aren't you just going to replace the centralized platforms with another centralized platform then?
No. So that's why we're a meta search, meaning that we power the search part of it, but all of the listings there are all direct booking listings. And that's very deliberate because our mission is to empower direct connections between travelers and hosts. And so we don't want to be another centralized entity. So the booking will always occur directly with a host so that it's a peer-to-peer booking. But really what we're doing is we're making it easier for people to be able to find those properties.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So I guess, you know, maybe a little bit step back question, but, you know, important one not to forget. So what's behind the hood? We usually don't talk about chains and tokens here, but I think it's important to ask, on top of what you guys are building, the foundation, because it looks like it's supposed to stay.
Yes. So the technology piece is actually, you know, one thing I like to say is the technology isn't really important because of the technology. It's about the why behind the technology. And so with our booking contracts, those are using smart contracts, which is essentially code that says if something happens, then this other thing happens. Obviously, very simple, but I know your audience isn't super technical. So just to keep it really high level. And the reason that smart contracts for bookings, especially crypto bookings, is really important is When you have an intermediary in the middle, whether that's a platform or a payment processor, you're vulnerable to that. And so what ends up happening often is, let's say you're using booking.com, right? And this is a real example. Last year, for 6 months, what happened was any host in Europe who were using booking.com, they had their payments held, meaning that they were owed tens of thousands of dollars often for one host. And yet they're running their business and they're paying for these expenses. But because of a payment issue with booking.com, hosts weren't getting payouts. Another example is, let's say you're using PayPal or Stripe. What happens all the time is either your account gets flagged because maybe you might have a bunch of chargebacks, or someone says that you're, you know, doing something fraudulent, or they pull out of your market.
And happening so now you're to me almost every month.
Exactly. So, you know, like I think people who don't run payments don't really understand how big of a problem this is. But if your only way to run your business is to take payments through a payment processor, I mean, you're in a really, really vulnerable position. And that's really what the beauty of smart contracts and blockchains allow you to do, is because they're you can't change them after you create them and you truly own them because it's attached to your wallet. That means that nobody can come along and say, hey, Peter, I'm going to cancel your smart contract account, and so you can't take payments anymore. Like, nobody can do that. And so I think for us to get to a really sustainable world where we're not just relying on these payment processors, smart contracts are really the way to be able to do that. And, you know, I think another example I'll give is with the Russia-Ukraine war. All of the Russian hosts had their Airbnb account canceled. And, you know, I totally understand why that obviously happened. But if you're a host in Russia, now all of a sudden you have no way to run your business. And, you know, it might even be that you're hosting people within Russia for very legitimate reasons, right? You have people visiting families, needing to travel for business, sure, et cetera. And if you're relying on Airbnb, PayPal, et cetera, like, you have no way to run your business. But if you have a smart contract that you can continue to take bookings from, now you can do that. And so I think there's very, very important reasons that often in the Western countries, we don't really think about. But that's why I think there's really high crypto adoption in places like Latin America, Turkey, a lot of parts of Asia, because it's not really just a speculative instrument for people to buy, but it's actually solving a real world problem. And I think in short-term rentals or travel specifically, this is becoming more and more of an issue over time. And so we're trying to get ahead of that curve and provide infrastructure that people need to solve these problems that they're already facing.
Totally agree. So I think good angle to look at would be, you guys created your own token, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it for governance or for payments, for both? And why you didn't decide to use any other token, which already
exists? Yeah, so definitely governance, payments, and then other utility within our ecosystem. So the idea is very much that it's for access and for benefits. And the token specifically, I think one of the important parts of the token, why we wanted to create our own, is in 2020, COVID happened and there were mass cancellations across pretty much the entire travel industry, right? But specifically, sure, as it relates to short-term rentals, what ended up happening is a lot of people were expecting payments to come in from bookings that were made, you know, let's say a year ago or 6 months ago. They have staff, they have mortgages, they have a lot of expenses that they have to pay. And because of these mass cancellations, all of a sudden they have no revenue coming. Now, on the flip side of that, at the end of that same year, Airbnb had the largest IPO of 2020, right? And what ended up happening was overnight, you had a ton of millionaires and even some billionaires from that IPO. Now, as a community builder for the last decade, you know, I think that there's definitely a very real imbalance of value that happens when a company goes public. And I think that's okay if everybody in your community is happy. But I think when you're making a lot of money off of people, but then you're not really sharing the benefits of that, I think that becomes a really unhealthy, unsustainable ecosystem. And I think that's what makes Web3 really different. And that's why a lot of people are attracted to it, because people are tired of contributing value to an ecosystem, but not really getting benefit from it. And even worse, what ends up happening is often with companies, as they start out, you know, they're very customer focused, because that's where they know the value has to come from. But as they grow this ecosystem that becomes really big, then they move further away from that and become less and less community driven over time. And I think that was really what characterized Web 2. But going into Web 3, I think that will happen less and less, because people are really tired of contributing this value and not really getting that back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, it's typical company journey these days.
Exactly.
So you start with your customers and then you end up with yourself. I worked with some corporations where, you know, people would basically keep themselves busy inside the company, never saw the customer, no need, you know, enough meetings internally, why to talk to someone from outside. Well, let's look at the practical side now. So are there any properties I could book right now on DTravel?
Yes, definitely.
Cool. Do it with my credit card, or do I need the token?
No. So you can pay with fiat, so any credit card essentially, and then you can also pay with crypto. So right now we're on BNB chain, but we're going to be expanding to other chains, including Matic, because for us, especially where we see real world adoption happening, since travel is something that touches everybody all around the world, it's not a niche product like a DEX or anything like that. We want to make it as easy as possible for anyone, even a grandma, to be able to use the infrastructure that we built and book peer-to-peer. So on the back end, how we're going to make that really easy is, if, let's say, for example, I'm the host and you're the traveler, if you want to pay in, let's say, I don't know, Bitcoin, but I prefer to actually have my settlement in USDC, we're actually going to automate all of that on the back end so that you just set your preference, and then it becomes really easy for two people to transact without really having to figure out, you know, what the currency is in between, very much the same way that Forex happens today. That's the vision we're building towards, because I think that the future is obviously going to be multi-chain and cross-chain, and we can't really make adoption happen without that.
Absolutely. So let me just quickly have a look. I'm a traveler. I want to find a stay, and you want me to join the wait list. When am I getting off the wait list so I can actually book? Is it like the approval process, or are you guys heading up towards some big launch, or was the...
Yeah, so the AI meta search that I mentioned, that's what this wait list is for.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Cool. So is it a secret, or you can tell me how many properties and which countries we can go with the travel right now?
Yeah, so it's not a secret. The reason why I think our growth has been a little bit slower is because we don't have a search. And so every property has to essentially do their own marketing, which is why we're coming up with this meta search.
Sure.
We have properties in the US, in Australia, in UK, different parts of Europe. And then we have Thailand and some in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely looking to grow our property count. And that's primarily through partnerships, because a lot of property managers who want distribution through something like a MetaCert will be able to distribute their properties directly to DTravel.
Sure. So I've spent some time in the travel industry. So I think, you know, getting people on board with something new is hard in any industry. But if you promise distribution without 20% or 30% fee, everybody will be happy to try whatever you are offering, basically. So shouldn't be a big deal once you are ready, guys.
Yeah, what's interesting is, so I'm still an Airbnb host, and I actually got a notice yesterday telling me that they're moving to what they call simplified pricing. So over the last 2 years, there's obviously been a lot of uproar from travelers about the fees. And so Airbnb has been testing out this idea of either hiding fees or showing fees, or making hosts pay for the fees. And then the idea is the host just mark up their own costs to take into account those fees. So they basically sent me an email yesterday saying that based on their testing, they have moved now to what they call simplified pricing, which means that hosts are required to pay for all of the fees. And then they have to, you know, mark up the fees to account for that. But the language that they used was, what we have found is that hosts who use simplified pricing and pay for the fees and keep their prices competitive get 17% more bookings. So I feel like the unspoken thing that they're saying is, okay, you just pay the 15%, keep your prices the same, and you're going to get more bookings, but you're going to lose more money. And I think that this is actually really good news for DTravel because there's clearly a shift towards a lot of onus on the host. Right now, obviously, a lot of the power is in the travelers, but I think as hosts look towards more and more options that help them diversify away from these platforms because it's not good for their business, and I think that represents a really good opportunity for companies like DTravel who are coming in and trying to really make it different and more beneficial for not just hosts, but also for travelers as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can, you know, so I've been a traveler all my life, mostly for business, but I always felt that the balance of power is not really okay, because especially in the travel industry, you pay for a lot of things in advance, things you don't know, never saw, you know, you have no idea what's happening, and get anything back is kind of difficult. And also, you know, finding what you are looking for is like a skill which is unbelievably hard to come by. So, you know, if you do it for 20 years, you kind of get a feel for how different platforms work. But if you have your assistant to book anything, you know, it's going to be 50-50 that it's going to be a miss. So, yeah, it might be the right hotel or right star hotel. It's going to be totally wrong place. Or you know that this hotel just sucks in Denver and, you know, it should be a different one. So I think based on the fact that, you know, you guys are basically decentralized platform, there should be an ability for people to build whatever they want on top of DTravel, I imagine.
Yes.
Personalized searches or AI assistants which know you and can book the stuff for you. So that sounds exciting, at least for me.
Yeah. That's definitely on our roadmap. So as part of governance, obviously we want to make it open for anybody to be able to build with the technology that we use. And so we are working towards open sourcing a lot of our products so that if, let's say, you, like you said, you want to build an AI assistant on top of the DTravel Direct product or any of the other products, you can actually do that. And, you know, I really do believe that the way that you go faster and you become sustainable and you build a moat is to have other people feel like they're a part of it. And so why would you want to go somewhere else if you feel like you're an owner and something you're going to benefit from that? So that's really the vision that we're driving towards, is making it so that anybody can contribute and then benefit from that contribution.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the reasons why I screen shared your webpage is that it looks very user-friendly. And I think it's important for people to, you know, see something. When they hear crypto, it's typically like, oh, this is going to be hard. That's the first reaction. And so I just wanted to showcase that, you know, you guys have it kind of really neat, and that it looks like you are really thinking about the user way more than, or maybe at least in the same way, like about the technology behind it, which is great. I see we are kind of running towards the 30 minutes. So let's talk quickly about the team. And then let's jump into, like, what would you like guests, I mean, travelers, and the hosts to do right now before you launch the meta search? Because I think that's the good message to end up with.
Sounds good. Yeah. What about the team specifically?
I mean, so you guys, I assume, as every crypto project, you guys are a distributed team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would like to know, you know, what's the ratio between the designers and engineers?
Good question. So I would say our most of our team actually comes from travel, which makes us quite unique because there was a project in 2017 that I invested in that was supposed to be a decentralized Airbnb. It was a Web3 project. And I think the reason that they failed was twofold. One was the technology just wasn't really there right now, which makes it a really good time right now to build in Web3 because tooling has become a lot more robust and mature. The second reason is that they didn't have subject matter expertise. And the travel industry, and specifically short-term rentals, is very nuanced, I think. And if you don't understand those nuances, it becomes really hard for you to build solutions because there's a lot to consider. And I think the other thing is the connections and the reputation, because with the travel industry, it's really hard to get partnerships if you don't have credibility. And so that's definitely one thing that I think makes our team really unique and the best team positioned to be able to solve this problem, because most of us have a lot of experience in this industry, either having worked in it or definitely as people who have been community builders. And I think the second thing is we also have a lot of expertise in the Web3 industry because a lot of us have been in it for, you know, over 5 years, which it sounds crazy, but in Web3, that's obviously a long time because that's probably more
that's
like 30
years.
That's
a long time, yes.
Yes.
How was the size of the team?
We have about 20 people.
Okay. Fair. Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of time, you know, people underestimate, especially when they are setting up to build something like a marketplace, which is basically what you are trying to do, that, you know, it's not enough to understand one side of the marketplace. You have to understand both. And definitely it's a great advantage if you have connections to the industry, so you can kind of gain trust that people don't think you are lunatic with a token. or a blockchain badge, and they actually know that you're a normal person trying to solve a problem. So that definitely helps. So
yeah.
I think, so what is the thing you would like hosts to do and the travelers to do in the first quarter of 2024? Because I assume we should talk again once you guys launched successfully the meta search.
Yeah, I would love that. Well, for hosts, if you want another distribution channel or if you want to set up a direct booking site, definitely come to DTravel. What's really unique and deliberate about what we've done is that we actually don't charge upfront. So if you get a booking, that's when we charge, because we want to make it as frictionless and as easy as possible for people to get set up with direct bookings. Mm-hmm. And then for travelers, especially if you're a crypto traveler or you're a nomad, definitely join the waitlist, because once we launch the meta search, then I think it'll be really helpful for people, especially if they travel a lot, because we're going to have some pretty interesting things like traveler profiles, like a nomad profile. So if there's specific things that you're looking for as a nomad, I think any nomad, including myself, knows how difficult it might be to find the right kind of properties. So really being like a user first approach to how we're solving for the meta search, I think a lot of travelers will really find a lot of value in.
Mm-hmm. That sounds awesome. By the way, a quick question. Are you part of the Crypto Nomads Club?
I am. Yes, I'm actually one of the Lisbon, I guess, organizers. So I organize quite a lot of events here for Crypto Nomads Club. They're a great community. Love them.
Neat. Very neat. Cool. I had a question on my tongue. Oh, yeah, it was. So you charge at the booking. How much do you charge?
3%.
3%. Okay. I think you guys have all the numbers you could ask for today. Please go to DTravel and register a property. I assume there was something like a website builder for the property, or you guys build it specifically? I can do it myself if I have a property.
Yes. Yeah. It's self-serve, so it's really easy. You can literally set up a direct booking site in 1 or 2 minutes. We have an Airbnb import, which makes it really easy if you already have an existing Airbnb profile to just import. Yeah. And then think of it kind of like Shopify, where you can customize your direct booking site really easily. And again, like, this hasn't really existed before. So the way that Airbnb made it really easy for people to list a property, we essentially want to do that with direct bookings, make it as easy as possible for you to get started with direct bookings and give you the tooling to be able to do that.
All right. Awesome. So you got it, guys. You know everything about e-travel, everything we could fit into sort of 30-ish minutes. I'll be in touch with Cynthia for sure after they launch the meta search because I am interested in it myself.
Awesome.
Thank you very much for the time that you spent with us today. It was awesome.
Thank you so much, Peter.
And you'll find all the links you need in the show notes as always. And I wish you a great day. And that was it for today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect with my guest or if you're interested in some of the points that were discussed today, just check the show notes for links. And don't forget to subscribe for future episodes. Also, if you are compelled, please leave a review. It helps others to find the podcast, and you can surely share it with your friends to save them the trouble of discovery process. I definitely hope you would do that for me. One more thing. From January 2024, there is an option for the interested collectors to mint the episode or just the episode's art, which is always uniquely created by me for each guest and project. So go check the show notes to find out more. Until next time, keep it colorful and stay positive, friends. Ciao.